And welcome everybody to the Untold History Channel. My name is Ron Partain, and we have a kind of a nice real roundtable going on today. This was put together hastily earlier today. Wasn't really planning on this, so it was, this is kind of a Sunday treat. I'm going to let Armando go ahead and introduce our guests. Armando, take the floor, brother.
Thank you, Ron. Welcome, everybody. Today, we're going to be talking about exposing the 14th Amendment fraud. And our roundtable today, we're featuring Ghost, we're featuring Lord God, or Gordon. And we have Bruce, the constitutional surgeon, along with Ron Partain and myself. We're going to be basically getting quite the education today from Bruce. Okay, he is basically going to go ahead and break down the 14th Amendment, maybe a little bit on the 13th also as well, and basically tell us what the real scoop is with the 14th. So with that, okay, I'm going to go ahead and turn the microphone over to Ghost, if you want to kick this off, give an introduction, and then we'll bring Bruce on, and let's go.
All right, I just want to make one quick statement. Somebody sent me some of the chat things regarding our last broadcast. No, I'm not spreading fear porn. Yeah, I just want to give you this. I was giving out information regarding a potential pathogen release, a week to 10 days, if not more, before all of a sudden, Zero Hedge, all the mainstream media started jumping on it. So I'm not here to spread any of that kind of nonsense. I'm here to give you a distant early warning. Be that as it may, please don't take me as you do a lot of the others out there who are profiting and making quite a bit of money on this garbage. No, I don't do that. I don't make a dime. So I want to introduce a friend of mine for about a good 10 to 12 years. We've always kept in touch. We've had a lot. Hundreds, and if not a thousand hours of discussions in the last, 10 to 12 years. And I consider him to be the foremost mind on the 14th Amendment out there. And I would put him up against anyone out there, no matter what their so-called levels of education are, no matter what they do for daily reporting. So here's Bruce Ray.
Howdy, y'all.
How you doing, Bruce?
Excellent, sir.
Hey, I just want to make one thing clear. Are we talking about the 14th Amendment or the 15th Amendment? Because we all know that there was a missing 13th Amendment.
Well, there's actually three 13th Amendments.
Really?
Yes, sir. There's one from 1812, the title of nobility. There's one from March 2nd, 1861, to secure slavery as a state right. It was proposed by the state of Ohio, Congressman Corwin. It passed House and Senate by Northern vote only. Southern states said they succeeded and they refused to participate in the vote. And Lincoln signed it in the law and even said he signed it in the law March 8th, 1861 in his first inaugural address. And then the third 13th Amendment from December 1865, which is almost identical to the second 13th Amendment. You can find them both on proofitsreal.com. That's one of my sites.
Interesting. That's the first time I've ever heard that.
And had it not been for 8 of 11 Southern states voting for the third 13th Amendment to abolish slavery, ratification would have failed. It passed by one vote. Georgia was the deciding state.
Well, I think it was the but all the states that came back into the states that came back into the union after after the war, they were basically bribed and cajoled by the government by the Republicans, were they not?
Yes, sir. But let me tell you about back to that 15th Amendment, just because you brought it up. One of the elements of sovereignty, no matter what country it is in the world, is that country has its own citizens. You have two different types of citizens. And the legal definition for the word citizen is body politic if you're a citizen of a non-corporate government, and corporate body politic if you're a citizen of a corporate government. Now, when they passed the 14th Amendment, it's a different citizen than what the Constitution created in 1791. The Constitution created a state citizen at Article 4, Section 2. It was a non-corporate citizen. It was a body politic. And let's say we went back time in a time machine and we decided we wanted to fight in the Civil War. And let's say I wanted to fight for the state of New Jersey. And let's say you wanted to fight for the state of, I don't know, Texas. When you went to war, all these Confederate flags and American flags, most of them wasn't on the battlefield. You were a state citizen. You fought behind your state flag. Tennessee right. being the last state to leave the Union. When they left the Union, they took their citizens with them.
Mm-hmm.
When Tennessee went to battle, they had their Tennessee flag because they were Tennessee citizens.
And right.
the same, you know, and that's the citizen the Constitution created. Then in 1862, and I'm going to show you all these documents. We're going to go through my website. They're all there. Congress redefined the meaning of the word person to include the definition corporation. Then in 1864, Congress redefined the meaning of the word state to include the definition District of Columbia. Then in 1868, a different citizen was created, a corporate body politic known as a citizen of the United States, 77 years after the Constitution created a completely different one. And this is in the 14th Amendment, this is the most powerful part. It made all persons, which is corporations, born and naturalized in the United States and subject to, which means inferior to, obedient to, governed by, affected by, accountable for, the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States and of the states where they reside. So they created a completely different citizen. They made a corporate citizen. And then the 15th Amendment, I had to lay down a foundation, otherwise I couldn't answer the 15th Amendment question that you kind of raised. The 15th Amendment gave that new corporate body politic the right to vote. Now, that was a century and a half ago. And basically, in the past century and a half, the citizen the Constitution created hasn't voted or held public office. So
very interesting.
That empowered the new corporate body politic basically to take the place of the organic body politic. Now, let's say you wanted to go buy your shotgun at the gun store. What's one of the questions on your gun paper that you have to ask? Are you a citizen of the United States? If you were a citizen the Constitution created, they deny your sale. Isn't that something? Hmm.
Well, there should be no 4473s anyway, but that's a whole other topic of conversation.
Like invasion of the body snatchers, they switched the body politic our founding fathers gave us with a corporate body politic. That's like people argue, you know.
That's a corporate question on a corporate form.
You know, the declaration says they shall not tax a man's income. Okay, but you're not taxed as a man, you're taxed as a corporation. And people don't understand that. They circumvented our founding fathers' intent by giving you a different standing in law. That's why every letter of your name is capitalized. If you have a driver's license, take a look. Then subpoenaed for court, same thing. Second grade, you're taught only the first letter of your name should be capitalized. It's a different standing in law.
That's correct. I understand how that works.
Now, if you
go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, I understand how that works because no capitalized name is referring to a corporate name. Corporate names, you have to be dead, legally dead. It's a trick that the Bar Society pulled on everyone. So if you're legally dead, you have no rights at all. And that's by capitalizing the name. It's the surname that traps you. And all capitalized name on your birth certificate or wherever whatever document you have means that you are legally dead and you have no voice, you have no rights. And this is a stunt that the Bar Society does. I've done it worldwide.
No, okay. So I have a question here. Is this, because everybody talks about the Constitution of 1871, and I don't necessarily, I don't subscribe to that. But are you saying that it was the amendments, the 14th and the 15th Amendments that really created that corporate structure?
Well, you can't have a government without citizens. And what they did is they stole the citizens from the organic republic, and they created a new one. And I break it all down on the website. I have a website that I was going to teach off of. It's completely free. There's no donation page. I want nobody's money. I spent over 100 hours putting this up, and I already know the research. It took me that long just to find credible links. Everything's .gov and .edu, except for one link, and I'll point that out when we get there. You have to join the Library of Congress, and it's free, in order to view this document. But I do have it PDF'd in case you don't want to do that. But this is my life's work. It's my obsession. You know, any other era of time, I know about 1933 and 1913, I have no interest in any of it. But all of that happened because of this. If it wasn't for this, this is the that's just fruits of the poison tree. This is the tree. Without this jurisdiction, none of that could have happened. If y'all could, I'm going to be teaching off my website, matrixfraud.com.
Okay, hold on a second here. I'm going to go to matrixfraud.com.
Yes, sir. And that is spelled M-A-T. For the, anyone in the audience that don't know how to spell well, matrixfraud.com.
All right. So what I'm going to do here then is I'm going to go ahead and share this screen.
And this website advertises nothing. It's not a money thing for me. Every American has a right to know, because they lied to us in school about history. And this is where everything went best. Everything went south. This is the jurisdiction that allowed everything for the mess we have today. Almost every complaint that Tea Parties had when I used to teach Tea Parties comes from this jurisdiction. That's why I say they're just fruits of the poison tree. You get rid of the tree, the fruits are gone. There's no jurisdiction for it.
Okay, are you able to see the screen? Because I've got it under the blog, and it says the post here is January 27th. 2024, and it's here's the question, and it goes down. Is that where we're going?
Yes, sir. And on every link, I have two things. I have the document already PDF'd and highlighted right to that point of law for a couple reasons. Some people don't have the patience to watch more than a 5-minute video. They're not going to read 12 pages of something, you know. But the link verifies the credibility. Like, you go to the first link, you see memories.log.gov. That's the Library of Congress. That's very credible. You know, it's either that link or it's going to be a .edu. So everything I verify is facts. There's no hearsay. There's only one opinion that I will give, and I'll tell you it's my opinion in the summation of this. And it's just an opinion, but it's many years of research is based on it. And it's the reason why they keep the fraud going and the illusion of us having a constitution. And that is because they never could take our guns. The first year they tried to take our guns was that year you mentioned, 1871, at once England took over. They've been trying to ban them ever since. We've got over 420 million guns, over 300 million people, the largest standing army in the world. They have to keep this illusion going until they can disarm us somehow. Once that's done, I believe the illusion will vanish also. But that's my opinion. Not everything else I'm going to teach. There's a document to prove it. And every one of my students I had in the past, I give my word on this. As long as you don't go to the right or to the left or add or interject any opinion into what is on my website and teach everything just as I have it laid out, I don't give a dang how many letters somebody has after their name. It will not prove you wrong. I have a GED, and I shut up a retired federal judge who was running for U.S. House representatives in front of 3,000 people when we debated about the 14th Amendment when I ran for U.S. Senate in 2010. I've never lost a debate.
And you put up bounties for anyone who could counter this information, and it was sizable, some of them.
Yeah, one was 138,000.
And no one could take it because they could not prove it to be false. So let's continue from there.
So y'all ready to start on prove it's, on matrixfraud.com, y'all there?
Everybody is here. Bruce, again, please make a slight adjustment on positioning of microphone and where you're speaking, the distance, because we are, unfortunately, and people in the audience are verifying this, unfortunately, we are still dealing with staticky issues, and it's not consistent. It comes in and it comes out, so I don't know where else to go here. I've been running checks while you guys have been talking in the backgrounds, and everything is solid on our end. It's coming from your end. Sorry, but let's just try to make some physical adjustments and see if it's better.
This is basic as it gets, and I don't understand why.
Well, we've had in the past when I was going to do a show, someone had their entire system fried. You know the guy, you talked to him yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a brand new system. It was like $30,000 went up in smoke or something. Can y'all hear me better? I reposition the phone.
Reposition the phone again, please, because it's like very staticky. And here's what it is: it's just staticky. It's like you're getting reverb and it's staticky. I mean, we can understand what you're saying, but it's just not clear.
While you guys go talking, I'm going to try to set up a microphone that I have, and I think that might hopefully do away with it.
All right.
Copy that. Yeah, go ahead, Ghost. Go ahead and continue. But Bruce, go ahead and let's try.
Okay. I start the website off with a question, and I've asked quite a few people this question. A couple of them has been celebrities, a couple of them has been politicians, a lot of them has been average Joes. Some claim to be constitutional scholars. Here's the question. They created a different government in 1867. They had to replace the one the Constitution established in 1791 when it went into effect. The 39th Congress did that. It was the Reconstruction Acts of the 39th Congress. And as you can see by the first link that's highlighted, the document below, it was a temporary military government made only for the 11 rebel states. You can't show me where that government has ever stepped down, and you can't show me where that government has ever been repealed. So how'd the other 39 states get the same government? Why don't we have two governments in this country?
Interesting.
Yeah. You'd be surprised some of the so-called constitutional scholars that about fell out their chair when I answered that question. With much more education than me. Like I said, if you stick to these documents, I don't care how smart or how many letters they have after their name, they will not prove you wrong. As long as you don't add any opinion and just state of the facts. And that's all I do.
Beautiful.
And as you can see, the Reconstruction Acts are right there. Now, right below the Reconstruction Acts, when you scroll down, you see the next link. It goes to Yale Law University. It actually is the answer to my question. April 24th, 1863.
Right there. Right there. Wherever you're at right now in this position, stay and don't budge. It's clear, but I keep getting static from the comments. But continue.
April 24th, 1863. If you click on that Yale Law University link, avalonyaleproject.edu, you'll see Abraham Lincoln enacted a martial law jurisdiction wrote by Francis Lieber, a German, not an American, his former law partner before he won the presidency against Judge Douglas. Article 1 and 2 suspended the law of the land. We know what that is, our Constitution, until the Treaty of Peace is signed. Article 32 makes clear that in order to settle the permanency of this change, it must be a Treaty of Peace must be signed. It's all highlighted in yellow. Okay, now scroll down a little bit more. We have NPS.gov, NationalParkServices.gov, a branch of the Library of Congress where presidential speeches and debates are stored. There was no.
Where is this?
This is the link right below.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I just want, because I was on the Yale site. So,
If you scroll down to the next link, it's NPS.gov.
I'm there.
NationalParkServices.gov. It's a branch of the Library of Congress. And like Lincoln's first inaugural address, his debates with Judge Douglas, all five of them, everything's in, is stored there from the Library of Congress. The second paragraph, first sentence says, no treaty of peace was ever signed to end the Civil War. Now, if you go back to Yale, that was a requirement to settle that martial law jurisdiction. That's why the other 39 states don't have a different government. Now, Congress got all of this jurisdiction. I'm going to show you the document as we scroll down because everything's here. And they used that martial law jurisdiction and made a fake executive order number 6 that the president never signed, which is actually what said ratified the 14th Amendment. It was never lawfully adopted. I have those links also. We're going to cover all that. Everything's law-driven. I don't deal in hearsay. But one thing I will say is trying to teach the 14th Amendment, they teach so much fake history. The first thing they're going to do is think you're a racist. because they teach in school now, this amendment is what gave us equality. And that is completely horse manure. What gave us equality was the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Which is another load of bullshit, too, but that's another day. It's a topic for another day.
You know, this amendment was said to be ratified in 1868. So let's look at the facts. Who was supposedly declared equal in 1868? Not the Native Americans. They were slaughtered for decades, as I point out in my paragraph here. This, half this country's gender was female, at least at that time. They didn't get equality. 50 years later, they had to fight to get the right to vote. 110 years later, women's lib, they had to go through a bunch of protests to get equal work for equal pay. The Asians were locked up in internment camps during World War II. They didn't get equality. The blacks, all the way until 1964, didn't have equality. In fact, this is the only jurisdiction that America has been ran under with laws and courts and all of that since July 28, 1868. That means this jurisdiction from 1868 to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 enforced every racist law in America. The different punishments for the same crime, the different bathrooms, the different schools, Miss Parks, getting arrested for moving to the back of the bus. This is the jurisdiction that did all of that. And it's just, it's terrible that they teach, this is what gave us equality. It's like teaching Jim Jones juice was actually vitamins. I mean, it's a racist amendment, at least for the first 96 years of its said ratification. But, you know, I point that out. Common sense would tell you I'm not wrong. Now, now when I scroll down, I show how the third 13th Amendment was passed with the vote of 8 Southern states, which shows that this was not about slavery. In fact, when Lee surrendered a grant at Appomattox Courthouse, April 9th, 1865, the said Emancipation Proclamation from September 22nd, 1862 went into effect. And the Southern states no longer lawfully had slaves, although out in the woods somewhere, they probably still did because they didn't hear of the news at that point. But 4 Northern states, or 2 border and 2 Northern states, Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, still had slaves.
The last state to have slaves was New Jersey, if I remember correctly.
Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and New Jersey. Yes, sir. Well, all 4 of those states had to give up their slaves when this 13th Amendment went into effect.
Correct.
None of them were Southern. 2 of them fought for the North throughout the entire Civil War.
Another thing that's very interesting that people don't realize is that when West Virginia, which essentially seceded from Virginia because they wanted to be with the North, when West Virginia seceded, they came into the Union as a slave state.
That was never a lawful state. That's our first unconstitutional state.
Interesting. I've never heard that argument.
3 of the U.S. Constitution states that they had to have the state's permission and Congress's permission in order to form a new state. They didn't have Virginia's permission. They fought Virginia.
Well,
DirtyUncleSam.com. I have a video that's like 4 minutes and 55 seconds long. I did it in under 5 minutes. No lawful states in America. That's the first state I point out. According to the Constitution, Article 4, Section 3, no state shall be formed within the borders of an existing state without the consent of that state and Congress.
Okay, but at that time, hadn't Virginia seceded?
According to Texas versus White, they never succeeded.
When did Texas versus White? What was that? When was that? I'm sorry?
U.S. Supreme Court, 1869, Texas versus White, said the Southern states never had real or lawful governments. The ordinance of secession was complete, null, and void.
Very interesting syllabus.
Okay, well, but then that would have been retroactive, would it not? Because when Virginia or when West Virginia came into the Union, wasn't it like 1863 or 1864?
I think it was 1862, but I
might. It was during the Civil War. It was during the War of Northern.
On that video on DirtyUncleSam.com.
I'm just saying if West Virginia came in as a state, if they broke away from Virginia, who was at that time, they had seceded, then the whatever that court case was, forgive me, I don't remember it. Texas v. White, I think what you said. That court case would have had to retroactively apply to Virginia, and I don't think you can make law that's retroactive.
I gave you something to think about.
Okay.
All 11 southern states that said to have joined the Confederate States of America repealed their state constitutions with the Ordinance of Secession. Now, if the Ordinance of Secession was completely null and void, like Texas versus White said in 1869, at that point, those southern states were 2-3 constitutions into the future. Some of those organic constitutions go all the way back to the beginning of their statehood. And they were ratified by House and Senate and signed by the president, which means, according to Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the U.S. Constitution, which would make it supreme law of the land. Which means those constitutions were never lawfully repealed, which means all 11 southern states are operating under a fraudulent constitution. That's no one's ever addressed that in the past 150 years.
Can I ask you, this is an opinion question. What is your opinion on the Confederate States' ability to secede? Do you think that they had the right to secede?
Yeah, they did. Even Georgia pointed out that when they became a state, they signed an agreement that they could leave the Union because they're one of the original 13 states. It's in the House Journal. I have that listed on proveitsreal.com.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad you said that because, I mean, there's so many people talk about the South seceded. Nobody wants to talk about how the northern states almost seceded over the War of 1812, and the New England states actually threatened secession like 2 or 3 times prior to what they quote the Civil War.
Well, we're still under the martial power jurisdiction of the Civil War, so they're using that to trump everything.
Yeah, and I am no fan of Lincoln, none at all. I digress. Go ahead.
Now, if you scroll down a little further, I point out how can the 13th and 14th Amendments both be lawful? And I raise a pretty good argument there that I don't think anyone can refute, but I would like to see him try. See, the 13th Amendment was passed with a vote of 8 of 11 southern states. And then then during Reconstruction 2 years later, they claimed the southern states didn't have real or lawful governments, 10 of 11 southern states, so they replaced their governments because they refused to adopt the 14th Amendment. And the new governments adopted the 14th Amendment. So if the southern states didn't have real or lawful governments, then how did the 13th Amendment pass? When had it not been for 8 of the 11 southern states voting for the 13th Amendment, ratification would have failed. Georgia was a deciding state. And if they did have lawful governments, then they overthrew lawful governments to ratify this amendment, which would be treason. So either the 13th Amendment can't be lawful or the 14th Amendment can't be lawful. They both can't be lawful when you look at it from that position, can they? And I've never once heard any of these scholars, professors, and all these know-it-alls ever once address this. Not once have I ever heard anyone address it at all. Now, the next.
I really need to get you, Bruce. I really need to have you on with my constitutional guy, Bruce, or Doug Gibbs, because we teach the Constitution on my channel every Tuesday. And when we go through the Constitution, when we're done, we go back through. And I've never heard the arguments that you're presenting here. This is really fascinating stuff.
I'm obsessed with this 14th Amendment. I'm obsessed with it. I'm very OCD about it. I mean, well, I'll give you some history of why I went this route. In 1980, I had a school teacher in Northern California, Miss Keelan. I was in a small town called Millville. In 7th and 8th grade, it was the same classroom. Our teacher was also the principal. She came out of retirement. She was in her 70s, and she was a retired school teacher. And she hated the fact they changed history after World War II. And she taught her class with 1936 history books.
after time. World War II shit. They changed history. They've been changing history since all throughout. But World War II was when they really started to go hog wild.
And in this history book, it stuck to me. It said that the Southern states were forced to repudiate their war debts.
Okay, let me. Somebody's got
a ringer on or something.
Yeah, please forgive me. Let me interject. Let me interject here really, really quick. I need for Ron or maybe Ghost or somebody to check your phones for messages that are coming through or a microphone on a secondary device that is left on. I think that may be the issue that we're having.
There's nothing here on other than one phone and a computer that is not linked to anything. That's it. Let me try something very quickly. You hear anything good out of this mic?
No, that's far worse.
This is the best we can do.
Okay.
All right.
So we got to work with.
Now, like I said, everything I teach is factual. You scroll down to the next link, and it's like a cartoon character there with a fellow with a suit and a briefcase. And once again, it goes to the Library of Congress. Right there is the link, and then below it, I have the highlighted document from 1862, where Congress redefined the meaning of the person, the word person, to include definition, to include the definition corporation. I'm sorry.
Is that the link memory.loc.gov?
Yes, sir. That's the Library of Congress.
So, that link is broken.
Is it? I might have to go find another link then.
Yeah, that link is broken.
All right.
Let me try to do this.
I go through the Library of Congress and find a fresh link and put it back up. I got to do this every once in a while.
Let me see if this works. No, that didn't work either. I was just trying. I tried to do something with the file name, but it didn't work.
You see the document.
What was the file name? A partnership firm or a corporation?
Well, Congress redefined the word person to include the definition partnership firm and corporation. I've got the document highlighted below the cartoon, and it has.
Oh, okay. I do see that. Oh, we can just use that then.
Yeah, chapter.
This looks like
1862. So you could research it. What page 460? I mean, everything's there. You need that. You could find it yourself, but I'll fix the link. Thanks for pointing that out. Now, see, they did this years in advance because they did this for an amendment that they hadn't even passed for 6 years later. Now, I give definitions so you understand what you're fixing to read. United States, according to Title 28, USC, subsection 3002, Part 15A, means a federal corporation. Now, the Supreme Court did give three different definitions for the legal term United States, but in law, it's a federal corporation. And as you know, jurisdiction means authority right below it. Now the first sentence of the 14th Amendment, you can understand what it means. You know, you have all persons, which now you know means corporations, corporations are born or naturalized in the United States, which is we just pointed out as a corporation, subject to, which is a legal term. I have it right up there. It means inferior to, obedient to, governed by, affected by, and accountable for. That comes from Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition. Thereof are citizens of the United States and of the states where they reside. Now, if you would have read that before I pointed out the meanings of United States, person, subject to, you know, you might have derived a completely different meaning.
Bruce, let me ask you another question. Is this essentially meaning that the state or that the federal government now has authority over the states?
Yes, sir. Matter of fact,
the states no longer have any sovereignty.
Of course not. Matter of fact, I believe I could successfully defend there's only one state, Washington, D.C. In 1864, Congress, I don't think I put it up here. I need to go put it up here. Congress redefined the meaning of the word state to include the definition District of Columbia and territories. So if your corporate personhood rests, R-E-S, in REM, in the municipal corporation of the District of Columbia,
a federal corporation in the United States. If you're that would be if you're a citizen of the United States, then possibly there's only one state, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an argument. You know, you might put up an argument against me that I can't refute, but this is going to be a hard one to get past once you learn, you know, how they kind of reworded things. And this is all done with a martial power jurisdiction that's never been relinquished. And then I show a court case up there, if you want to read it, where a corporation is a person within the 14th Amendment. And it's highlighted, so you can just go right to that document.
Well, remember, I've said many times in the past that we are still in a state of emergency.
Yes.
This is a banking holiday of 1933. This is what made it that easy to do that and to leave it in force. This is why you have such a plethora of executive orders coming out of the executive branch when that should not be the case.
This right, is because it's essentially the president is almost a dictator at that almost, point.
Exactly.
But can a state create its own sovereignty? And that's a question from Jay Rankin 01.
We'll both have answers on that.
Yes and no. I mean, we're still under a martial power jurisdiction, and that would supersede, you know, like I pointed out under General Orders 100, that supposedly, you know, suspended the law of the land, which we know that to be the Constitution. But at the same time, that isn't the framers' intent, you know. So I don't know. I would like to think so. I like to believe so. I like to believe there's some sovereignty. I mean, this, available to us, you know. But if nothing else, we need to get this Treaty of Peace signed.
Okay.
Gordon, I think, can weigh in on the ability to find sovereignty and to then put yourself in that jurisdiction, which is a worldwide jurisdiction. Gordon, what would you have to say about that?
With the problems you've got there, the thing is that you've got a corporate government. A corporate government makes void any sovereignty. So that's your problem. And this goes back to the bar members. The bar members have got an oath to London, in the city of London, not to the Constitution of the United States or anything. So their job is to keep you enslaved to Rome. Now, the only way you can get out of that, basically, is go back to the state, become a state national. Because in the Constitution, when they talk about persons, person refers, according to the Bible, God is no respecter of persons. A person is a dead entity.
That would have been of the 1611 revision, wouldn't it?
Yes, this is when they fucked everyone over around the world. The Bible, it refers to the person being God is no respecter of persons. It's mentioned many times in the Bible. Where they trapped everyone, this is worldwide in the English-speaking world, well, anyone that uses the Bible, in 1666, the Seneca Trust declared everyone to be dead and lost at sea. So if you're classed as being dead, what hope have you got? You've got to prove you're alive. And I believe in the states, by becoming a state national, which means a non-corporate, then you're alive and you're out of the trap.
Let me ask a question real quick, Bruce. So somebody made a statement in the chat. It says, all of this sounds great, but it means nothing with a corrupt Congress. And I would actually argue, and let me make a little side twist of that. What can we do with this information? How can this help us today you know, solve our current situation?
Well, the problem is most of the people out there that are smarter, more educated than me, don't know any of this. I mean, I've taught professors that are way smarter than me. They didn't know any of this. You can't fix the problem if you don't know it exists. Congressional Record, page 15646, Judge Lander H. Perez. Basically, the solution for this problem, which we're going to get to, I have that congressional link on here as well, says public awareness must be aroused, and aroused to the point that they demand remedy. Nobody's going to demand remedy if you have no idea. You know, if you learn this knowledge and you tell nobody, no one knows, that they don't know anything's wrong.
Well, okay. And so to that point, if people don't know anything is wrong, then this really means nothing. I mean, nothing is going to change. I mean, the way I look at this is you have generations of Americans who have been taught a lie. Their great grandparents were taught it. Their grandparents were taught it. Their parents were taught it. And then they were taught it, you know, I mean, 5-6 generations deep. And, you know, now it's like we've been propagandized for so long that we don't know which way is up or down, and we don't know what is truth. And so you try to tell this to somebody and they're going to look at you like you're batshit crazy.
Why so, you think I have my website
set up? No, 100%. Listen, I'm not questioning you. Not at all. I'm simply saying the point is that until a big chunk of Americans get on board with this, that we can affect change. I mean, do you think an Article 5 convention could resolve this?
Only if they're aware of the facts.
And I'll give you a way that it can be utilized. For those who are actually working on these issues in the shadows, and they exist, but they don't have everything. You have to assume that based on responses, based on how things are being governed at this moment. I'm not talking about anybody in Congress. There are others. Once they understand this basic aspect, and the ones who wanted this, once again, your only real enemy out there, and everyone's real enemy out there, is those who have claimed and maintained the right to issue currency. Again, privately owned supranational entities. You know some of the names involved. They're not your primary movers and shakers in that world. But you see the end result of what they're all partial owners of in BIS, the central banking system, at all. So again, this is why I point this out. It needs people like Bruce and others with their specialties to come in and to make this palatable. But what publisher is going to publish it? We've already been through that maze. It's going to have to be a foreign, say, renegade type publisher. There's a few of those identified. It will receive nothing but backlash in the, what do you want to call the media? Media means nothing. It means nothing. If you're getting your information from those pipelines, you're still stuck. This has to be handled internally and in positions that can step outside of jurisdiction in order to affect its application. It's not an easy subject. It's not an easy way to do it. There is no easy answer. This is why I always preach study, 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 and I named the number of books that everyone should have. Anytime you get offered I don't care if it's a contract for repair of your car beyond your, like we're seeing a flood of these commercials, they're taking advantage of a market that is developing because people are not buying new cars as fast as they used to. But you got to read the fine print in all of these. And don't read it as if you're reading it from a novel or a nonfiction book on fixing your house or any of that. You have to read it looking up virtually every word so that you know what they're saying as opposed to what you're interpreting by mere assumption. Never assume in any contract anything.
anything. I'll leave it at that for now.
I'll come in on that very point there. We have been so dumbed down with our education. People 200 years ago were better educated then than we are now. And this has been built by design.
With less education.
Yes. Well, we call it education, but it's just pure bullshit we've been taught.
Our it's history, indoctrination.
It's indoctrination. It sure is. And this is a constructed fraud, which has been going on for a long time. And if you want to trace it back, it gets back to the international bankers who work on contracts only. That's why you've got a contract. You've got a contracted government. It's a corporate. Anything that's corporatized, it only means that they operate under contract law. And that's how they've trapped everyone. You think you've got a right to vote. No, you don't. You've got a right to be a good little slave. Because you don't know that everything before you was a contract.
Everything.
And voting only proves the point. Every time you vote, you're just approving what's been done by the corporate government.
Actually, not to sound insulting or nothing, but the 14th Amendment created a different form of slavery.
That's right, it certainly did. Yep.
It made you a debt slave, an economic debt slave. In old Rome, if I wanted to borrow money from you, let's say buy a farm or something, it was traditional back then for me to pledge my labor in the event I defaulted on the loan. And in old Rome, that was known as a person. And like I said, Congress redefined the word person to include the definition corporation.
Yep.
Now, if you go to Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, it created the national public debt, which is like at, what, 30, 40 trillion or whatever. Now, I don't stay up with it. It's ridiculous. The middle of the 14th Amendment, Section 4, says you have no right to question the validity of the public debt. It comes out of your paycheck every week. It comes out of your paycheck every week, your parents' paycheck, your grandparents', but you have no right to question it. You became a debt slave. It's a different form of slavery. They don't, instead of whips and picking cotton, they just let you do what you want to, and they take it out of your check every week.
That's right.
It's kind of it's genius at their end, but I mean, it's kind of sucks if you're the slave, us.
I kind of feel like, and I don't mean any, no disrespect to a lot of, to black people, but a lot of the black people have been twisted and they've been exploited by the powers that be for social and racial division within the country. And what they need to understand is that the white common people like myself and the Hispanics and whoever, I mean, everybody, all Americans are basically in the same position as they are.
We're in the same boat. The skin color ain't going to save you.
100%. Exactly.
So ready to continue, gentlemen?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, the next link below is your right to expatriate back to the state citizen. You see, they knew it would be treason to create a different citizen than what the Constitution created. That's one reason that many people believe that know what I know. The 14th Amendment was never lawfully adopted. Courts say it's a political choice. But they couldn't force you to be the citizen without leaving a back door so you can go back to the state national citizen, as Gordon pointed out.
There always must be remedy.
And right below it, July 27th, 1868, is the link where you have a right to go back to the state form of government. And they can't deny, restrict, impair, or question your right to go back. Now, all these people, they pull over without a tag and throw in jail and call sovereign this or citizens and make them look like idiots. Those are the people that are trying to actually go back to the state citizen. And if they are denied that, then that means the 14th Amendment is definitely treason now, because it only lawfully existed, supposedly borderline, by being a political choice, leaving you the option to go back to the state form of government. And if that don't exist anymore, and it's no longer a political choice, then it's treason.
That's right. Now, if you if they deny your right to go back to be a state citizen, that means you're locked into contract law, and with no remedy, that's slavery.
Yes, sir.
And it's as simple as that.
And look at all these people claiming to be sovereign that wind up in jail and everything else. All trying to be just go under a different lawful jurisdiction and leave the corporate body politic alone.
Yes.
The governments, the states, the police, they don't recognize it. They put them in jail, take their cars, everything. And that means there's no law, there's no lawful remedy, no lawful right to go back to, no back door, no right to go back to the state national citizen because they're denying you. And that makes it
treason. You're looked at as somebody who's batshit crazy. You know, yeah. You know, I'm not a big TV watcher, but I watched, I recently just kind of went through like the entire 7 seasons of Bosch, right? And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Bosch or ever watched it, but I want to say it was either season 3 or season 4 when there was a case that involved like the FBI and whatever, and this corrupt FBI agent literally like stole some cesium and then pinned it on the national sovereign movement. Well, the point I'm trying to make is that even the powers that be in the media and television or whatever, they literally program this stuff into the TV shows so that people will think anybody who thinks like that is crazy.
Yep. It's like the Confederate flag, the X flag with 13 stars. I call it the X flag. The correct Confederate flag never had 13 stars. It was only 11 states. If you Googled the real Confederate flag, and I'm not a Southerner, I'm not sticking up for nobody. I'm from Southern California. The real Confederate flag has 11 stars in the left corner in a little blue square, and has 2 red stripes and a white stripe.
The stars flag, and bars.
The X flag was a religious Christian flag because I think it was St. John refused to be crucified straight up and down because he didn't think he was worthy, because that's how the Christ was crucified. It was like the Christians have this little cross thing on their neck or the fish. That's just a flag version of it. It has nothing to do with slavery. None of the 11 Southern states ever adopted that flag. You know, but everybody thinks it means hate and racism.
Actually, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't the Confederate flag. It was referred to as the Confederate battle flag because the stars and bars looked much too similar to the stars and stripes and could not be distinguished on a battlefield in the fog of war. So they got something that looked completely different and used it. They called it the battle flag, but it was never the Confederate flag.
No, sir. And if I went down the street of Los Angeles with that X flag, especially around Watts, I'd be shot, beat up, dead, have everything thrown at me. If I went down the same street with a real Confederate flag, nobody would have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how far uneducated, I mean, it's how indoctrinated people are. It is easier for me to teach 7th graders that have that have no falsehoods in their head than some of these adults that did 14, 15, 20 years in school.
There were there were multiple flags of the Confederacy, and one of them was called the Bonnie Blue flag, which was just a solid blue. Basically, it looked like the flag of Vietnam, but it had a blue field with a white star.
If you take a look at the actual rebel flag, okay, we all know it. Duke's a Hazard, you know, on top of the Charger.
That's the battle flag. That's the battle flag that he's talking about.
Correct. That is the battle flag. They basically flew this whenever they were on the offensive, is when they raised this flag, which gave the troops the command to attack. There is no racism tied to this flag. Okay, it was all bullshit. It was all made up. Now, if you take a look, if you remember the movie Smokey and the Bandit, okay, when they had the battle flag on the front of that Trans Am in the front, that used to be the Georgia state flag. They got rid of it, and they changed it to what's currently today the Georgia state flag. That Georgia state flag from today is actually a hell of a lot more racist than the actual battle flag. And if you take a look at it and do some research on it, you'll figure out why.
Yeah, here you go. This is the stars and bars right here. And these are the flags of the Confederate States. And then this is a good picture. If it opens up, it's got a lot of different flags here.
That one that you just said. Okay, so if you take a look at that flag right now, and I'll bring up the current Georgia state flag, look at the comparison of the two.
There is a slight difference.
Yeah, the real Confederate flag.
The real Confederate flag. Exactly.
I'm going to go to all the states because I think that would be a better, because you'd see actually quite a bit of differences here. You look at the, yeah, so here's the Georgia flag and the North Carolina. Oh, actually, so it is only the Georgia flag.
It is the Georgia flag only. Correct. Now, Bruce.
Yes, sir.
Is that a Confederate flag, the current Georgia flag?
It's a strong resemblance of it, but I ain't seeing 11 stars. Are you?
Zoom in on it.
Hold on, my guy. Can you see it? Yeah, your eyes better than mine.
Let me see if I can zoom in on this.
A little small. Hold on. Yeah.
It's got 11 stars.
You see it better. I don't know if it's 11, but...
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13. So there's 13 stars on there. Probably in honor of the original 13 colonies.
Yes.
Because if you look at if you go and you look at Arizona's flag and you see Arizona has the stripes here on the, has the copper star and the blue field, and then it's got the resembling the sunset, those are 13, and those were the for the in honor of the original 13 colonies. And of course, that was, I mean, Arizona was the last state to become a state in CONUS,
and Georgia was one of the original 13 states.
So that's correct.
Correct.
Yeah, even Georgia's Congress declared in the Georgia Memorial to Congress, the 14th and 15th Amendments was never lawfully adopted in 1957.
And yet here we are as a purple state today, which blows my mind. And it was public done awareness, on purpose, in my opinion.
You know, one out of every, 50,000 people might know this. One out of every 100,000 people might know this. I mean, you're overweighted by fraud. Public awareness needs to be aroused. We have the modern technology. We got social media. You know, we could get it out there. It just, nobody wants to look like the oddball. No one wants to look like the conspiracy theory. So that's why I put facts up, you know.
And no one wants to be a racist either.
Yeah, well, that's why I put that thing up about the racism. You know, they throw racist. I head them off at the pass the way I teach. So they can't come back with that mess. You know, I point out the racist 14th Amendment and how it, for the first 96 years of its said ratification, it enforced the different bathrooms and the different gun laws for the black race versus the white race, different punishments for the same crimes because of race. For the first 96 years of its said ratification, that makes it a racist amendment in my book.
Interesting. I'm trying to find a question that was posed out here, looking over the chat. That actually stuck out to me, but I could not get to it without interrupting everybody here. All right, so if the corporation, this is Avery. Jesus Christ, Avery 7199, if the corporation goes bankrupt, doesn't that change things?
Yes, it does.
Well, like I was...
A bankrupt corporation cannot trade. And that's what they're doing. They're trading illegally.
Because we are bankrupt, correct?
Oh, of course. You've been, you know how many times you've been bankrupt? God.
I know how many, but the audience may not. This is why I posed the question.
It's just ridiculous. They keep revamping redoing the bankruptcy on a regular basis, just to get them out of the, and so they can start a new corporation. Every time they get into a hole, they start a new corporation. it sounds the same, but the wording is slightly different. Like the just original like constitution wasn't the original constitution, which was set up as a corporation anyway. Wasn't it the constitution for the United States? And then it was changed to of the United States. And they're pulling this stunt all the time. Was the first?
There's American, that Libra code again, sir. There's that Libra code. Suspended the law of the land.
Law of the land because it's military code, and that's how they get around this. They go bankrupt and put the military in to run the show, but behind it is it's the same old bunch of ratbag bankers different presidents have tried to get rid of. Because you've only got to follow the money, and it goes back to the same families in England and France. If you, by the way, one of your compatriots up in New Jersey, a fellow called Mike King, you've probably heard of him, he's put out a new book called Dixieland Deceived, and it explains the financing of the Civil War on both sides.
Who?
Very, very, very interesting.
Who? Oh, who put that out?
Mike King.
Hold on. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it because I. You may not be aware of this, but I have Mike on my channel every Tuesday night after we teach the Constitution, and I have all of his books. So I'm gonna
the last
see if
book
I
put out was just recently is only called Dixieland Deceived. I bought the hard copy.
Now that Gordon brought that up, something that I read in that 1936 history book was when Lincoln made the Southern states repudiate their war debts, which means he forced them to default on their war debts. I do have another 1936 history book where I did find that in. That history book went on to say the Bank of England claimed what was theirs according to international law. Yep. It took possession of Washington, D.C. February 21st, 1871. They incorporated it doing business as the United States. The corporation was given all the power. Was it not inconsistent with the laws and constitution of the United States, which is double talk. It means consistent. And then went on to say 3 years after Congress set up the citizen of the United States for this future takeover. Now, the only other place I've ever read that was Ron Paul wrote the U.S. Economic History. Ron Paul wants every American to know part two. The U.S. Examiner had it online back in 2009. That's the only other place I've ever read it in my life, except for that 1936 history book my school teacher had.
Yep.
Someone brought up bankruptcy, and then you brought up about financing the war. And I remember reading that in that old history book, and I've never seen it anywhere since. I've Googled and everything, and I never could find it anywhere else.
Well, Mike King's got a very good article in that book. Explains how the bankers in Europe, it gets back to the – you know, the usual suspects. They finance both North and South. They can't lose.
I have a question that just popped in here on my phone, okay? And again, it's very elementary question, but people need to know and they want to know, right? So we're going to answer. How did the 14th Amendment come to be, and who was responsible for implementing this garbage?
I don't know, but the wording is, well, remember, all the laws are written by barristers, members of the Bar Society, which is registered in the City of London, comes under the Vatican. They've got an oath to protect the bar, and to hell with the fucking Constitution. They don't give a shit about that. They're protecting the bar.
Wow.
So that's your problem. Bloody lawyers. You can't trust them. They're liars. If they've got a bar card, they need taken out and hanging.
So once again, all roads lead back to the Vatican.
Yes, they do. All goes back to Rome. When you understand how it's done, yes, it's very, very clever.
Jesus Christ.
Unless you're brought into court, say, unless you've negotiated a contract with the presiding judge, and I would say do it after business hours, which is 9 to 5 for a court. You have to get his signature on a piece of paper saying he will or she will defend your constitutional rights. Otherwise, they can hold you in contempt if you demand that. They can fine you. They can throw you in jail. And you're
they don't lock you rocking the boat.
Go ahead.
They don't lock you rocking the boat because, remember, the court is the paper that the stuff is written on, not a building. So when you go to court, you're being taken there off because of a piece of paper. And you've been misidentified as being dead, because the courts can only deal, and commerce can only deal with dead things. If you're alive, you can't go to court. It's out of their jurisdiction. So the trick is, how do you prove that you're alive? And that's what I'm learning. And that's what the process I'm doing myself. To prove that I'm alive, so I'm out of their jurisdiction, then you're a true sovereign.
Ron, I don't know if you want to digress to the chat real quick for your folks.
There
are some
pretty
good questions that are flowing in here.
I'm multitasking here, but why don't you go ahead and go and ask the if you've seen a couple of good questions, go ahead and ask.
So from Bamlo, I'm just going to scroll through a couple here. Where's that one that I just saw? So
how
if
can
Congress
we,
can
how,
just print money, why do we have to? Why do we have to pay payroll taxes? The answer to that is we don't have to pay payroll taxes. Taxes are voluntary, but everybody still does because of fear of what? Going to jail.
Well, and first of all, Congress isn't printing the money. The bank, the Federal Reserve, is printing the money and charging interest to the government because they're loaning it to the government. The whole purpose was to ultimately bankrupt this country to, for its ultimate destruction.
That's right. That's how it works.
So it brings me back to the original question. Again, in general, how was the 14th Amendment added to the Constitution? How? Because obviously, if this is a fraud, which it obviously is, who's responsible for putting this garbage in there?
Ask your friendly lawyers who are sitting in Congress.
The traitorous bastards who occupied, basically all the Lincolnites of the House and the Republican controlled House and Senate, that very very much they were wasn't it John Marshall? They were basically disciples of John. Was it John Marshall? Am I getting that name right? But the point being is that they viewed the federal government as basically the parent of the children being the states, when it's the absolute converse. The federal government was born out of the states. The parent are the states. The states have authority over the Constitution. And as I understand it, the federal Constitution does not apply to the states. The federal Constitution only applies to the federal government, not the states. But for people who have desire to have control, they have completely flipped the system around, and now they are imposing their will, and they've made everything look legalese and convoluted, and nobody has. They've made everybody to believe that we are too simple to understand the Constitution, and they say, "Oh, well, you need a constitutional lawyer to be able to understand that." And Bruce, I'm sure that you could testify that how many people have you talked to who claim to be experts on the Constitution don't know shit about it.
Well, how many of these so-called experts are claiming Trump can't run for office because that stuff that happened in January 6th? And these are scholars, right. These are professors, these are attorneys, and they're all using the 14th Amendment to say that he can't run again. Well, here I am. I have a GED. I have no college education, and I can prove 20 which ways that the 14th Amendment's a fraud. And it was never lawfully adopted. And these are people with doctoral degrees. Like I said, just stick to the documents and the facts, and these higher learners will never prove you wrong. I give you my word.
Yeah,
that's nuts. And Ron, to your point, also, Is it true or not, and from my understanding, that what basically flipped the switch, as you say, was it that the states at some point, no matter what, let's say an issue came across one of the states and they're like, nah, you know what? We really don't want to go down this road with this issue. So we're just going to hand this off to the federal government. Let them deal with it. Okay. And then they turned it around and made it their own way. And little by little, other states started doing the same thing and the same thing and the same thing. And here we are now in the 11th hour. And it's like,
I don't necessarily think that it was that. I think the seminal moment was the creation of the Federal Reserve, because what that did is that reversed the flow of money.
Okay.
When you reverse the flow of money, because prior to the Federal Reserve Act, what you had was the states collected taxes. That was the whole reason for having the senators. Two senators for every state. Every state had equal representation. The Senate is supposed to represent the states at the federal level, not the 17th Amendment changed how we elected senators to make them basically glorified House of Representative members, right? Well, when they bypassed all of that, and then what they started doing is they started making the Federal Reserve money go out to the states. Now the states needed that Federal Reserve money, and look at what happens, you know, when there's an emergency. Oh well, we need federal aid. You know, send FEMA out here because we've got all these people that need all this aid, and so you know, all these emergency management stuff is nothing but a trick to create federal aid for the states. So, and if the schools rely on federal money for all their programs, the law enforcement relies on federal money for all their programs. So what we have is we have a centralization a mechanism that is bringing all of the stuff in the states under one, controlled authority.
Jesus Christ. We're screwed.
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, guys. You tell me if I'm wrong in that assessment. Bruce, challenge me on that. Am I right? Is my thinking rational, logical?
You are correct, because they've convinced everyone that they're nice little slaves and they're legally dead on paper, so they can't object to it. And they keep volunteering. This is the biggest problem. They keep volunteering to be slaves. They keep voting. They keep paying the IRS. Taxation's always been voluntary.
Yeah, but you do try telling that to the IRS. They don't want to hear that. Bruce, I think you had been muted or something. Can you respond to what I was saying?
About what?
About the Federal Reserve Act and how the Federal Reserve Act created a reverse the flow of money from the states into the federal government, to the federal government out to the states. And by using that mechanism, by using federal funds, they have essentially, grabbed the states by the balls and said, you're going to do what we say, or we're not going to give you any money and you're going to be broke.
Well, it's kind of like they stole who controls the gold controls the law. They took the gold away from us, actually. The Federal Reserve was getting their foot in the door. And then 1933, they suspended the gold. And then 71, they got rid of the gold standard altogether. Correct. Got rid of that useless paper that we call money.
That was Nixon.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't necessarily know if that was Nixon per se, or if that was really more of like, Council on Foreign Relations type stuff, basically, dictating to Nixon what he needed to do to kind of, that was his advisors telling him what needed to be done to fix the situation. I don't know if that was Nixon as much as it was Kissinger.
All these problems that we've talked about all come from the jurisdiction of the 14th Amendment. Had they signed that Treaty of Peace, there wouldn't be a 14th Amendment. You wouldn't have a Federal Reserve Act. You would have had a Bankers Holiday Act. You would have had none of that. These are all fruits of the poison tree. Like I've been saying, the 14th Amendment's the tree.
Where can we go to find out something that you mentioned that this, the 14th was never really truly ratified? It was made to be, like, it looked like it was ratified, but it never was really adopted.
Oh, it's the documents on matrixfraud.com. I haven't covered half of them yet. I've got congressional records and everything memorialized on the House floor that says this.
Can we talk about that?
Suarez, Louisiana legislator, page 15641 through 15646.
Well, let's bring that back. Let's bring that back up and talk about it here. No. Okay. So
we left off
right now.
Go ahead.
I'm at the 14th Amendment was never fully adopted according to the U.S. Constitution.
Yes, sir. And if you go right below it, I have Dyett versus Turner under evidentiary support in red letters. And it gives where you could find that. The first number is the page, the book. And then P would be Pacific Reporter, second edition. Then it starts on page 266. But all you need to know is you can just copy them. Just type in Dyett versus Turner. You'll find the Utah Supreme Court. And in red, the Utah Supreme Court pointed out in 1968 how the 14th Amendment was never lawfully adopted. The U.S. Supreme Court won't touch it.
I'm going to read this. Regarding the 14th Amendment, which the present Supreme Court of the United States has by decision chosen as the basis for invading the rights and prerogatives of the sovereign states, it is appropriate to look at the means and methods by which that amendment was foisted upon the nation in times of emotional stress. We have no desire at this time to have the 14th Amendment declared unconstitutional. In fact, if we are not asked to do that, we merely want to show what type of horse that court has to ride to justify its usurpation of the prerogatives of the states. Now, that's actually a powerful paragraph.
Wow.
Wait till you get to the next.
They don't want to touch this? Are you shitting me?
Joint Resolution number 48 proposing the 14th Amendment was a matter of great concern to Congress and the people of the nation. In order to have this proposed amendment submitted to the 36 states for ratification, it was necessary that two-thirds of each house concur. A count of noses showed that only 33 senators were favorable to the measure, and 33 were a far cry from two-thirds of 72 and lacked one of being two-thirds of the 50 seated senators. Very interesting.
Starting to answer your question, but the next one does even better.
Okay. While it requires only a majority of votes to refuse a seat to a senator, it requires two-thirds majority to unseat a member once he is seated. That's Article 1, Section 5 in the Constitution. One John P. Stockton was seated in December the 5th, 1865, as one of the senators from New Jersey. He was outspoken in his opposition to Joint Resolution number 48 proposing the 14th Amendment. The leadership in the Senate, not having control of two-thirds of the seated senators, voted to refuse to seat Mr. Stockton upon the ground that he had received only a plurality and not a majority of the votes of the New Jersey legislature. It was the law of New Jersey and several other states that a plurality vote was sufficient for election. Besides, the senator had already been seated. Nevertheless, his seat was refused, and the 33 favorable votes thus became the required two-thirds of the 49 members of the Senate. Jesus. In the House of Representatives, it would require 122 votes to be two-thirds of the 182 members seated. Only 120 voted for the proposed amendment, but because there were 30 abstentions, it was declared to have been passed by a two-thirds vote of the House. What?
Yeah. That's nuts.
This is Utah Supreme Court.
That's insane. So they've abstentions are counted as non-votes? That's bullshit.
This is the argument I come back at. How many of these people there in the parliament, in your Congress, are actually lawyers who have got an oath to the bar? It's a private bloody club.
So I'm going to go back to the missing 13th Amendment, Bruce, because there are some who suggest that the missing 13th Amendment, talking about if you accept the title, and essentially for those of you who don't know about the missing 13th Amendment, basically it was a title, it was passed in it was ratified by the original states and made, made law in 1816 or something like that. The point being is that if you took a title of nobility, you forfeited citizenship within the United States. Now there are many that believe that lawyers had the title of Esquire. And if you had the title of Esquire, you forfeited citizenship. Therefore, ergo that if you were a lawyer, you were not able to be in. You were not able to be in the government. I want your thoughts on that.
Well, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of the Constitution also forbids titles of nobility.
Correct. I know that.
But yes, that's what many believe. And remember when I said the Libra Code suspended the law of the land? There's many people that believe they duplicated the Constitution and basically switched it out, the 13th Amendment. And I think it was Colorado or Utah. I'm thinking it was Colorado. One of those states, I think it was Colorado, when they adopted the 13th Amendment for involuntary servitude and slavery, they put it in their constitution as a 14th Amendment because they already had the title of nobility amendment in their constitution.
I want to ask a question again, a little bit of a twist, because I asked earlier if a constitutional convention could fix this, and I think your answer, if I recall, was, well, you know, you got to know what to fix first. Well, let's take the assumption that we do know what to fix. Would an Article 5 convention be able to fix the situation if we had the men or women to go in and be on that that panel, or, you know, representing the states individually? Would be able to fix it?
Treaty of peace. If they're representing the states, sign that treaty of peace. Remember, the Libra Code says, in order to settle the permanency of this change, a treaty of peace must be signed. Article 32 makes that clear. They've never signed it. Okay. You know, if they get in there and they're representing the states, sign that treaty of peace. Let's get out from under the martial law jurisdiction from a war that was never actually declared 150 years ago. The smallest Native American tribe that this said government went to war to, at the end of their confrontation, what do? They sign a peace treaty. This war lasted for 4 days short, six days short of 4 years. Over 1 million people were wounded, over 600,000 dead, and they still haven't signed a treaty of peace, and it ended in 1865, April 9th. You know, public awareness must be aroused. You know, I would, if I ever come across a lot of money, I'd offer a reward for anyone to refute my research. Something stupid, $1 million. You know, that would get it out there. You're not going to call me a conspiracy theory. If you can prove me wrong, just take the money. I mean, how's a judge going to send that man to prison for 3 years away from his family for a bag of pot or whatever? If using the 14th Amendment jurisdiction, if all he or she's got to do is prove the amendment is real and collect the money.
The guy who did the movie Trading Places, Aaron Russo. Are you familiar with Aaron Russo's documentary that he created back in like 2001 or whatever, called America, Freedom to Fascism, and where he was talking about the IRS, and that there were a couple of IRS agents that they had questioned. And these IRS agents, there was a bounty of $10,000 to provide a law on the books that said people had to pay income taxes. And these IRS agents took them up on that and could not find a law on the books at all.
That was the We the People Foundation. I think it's up to 50,000 now. I was a delegate at the Continental Congress 2009, We the People. And I headed the 14th Amendment Committee. And when I walked out, I took half that Continental Congress with me. In fact, Professor Kallenbach, who is very educated, he's one of those people I taught the 14th Amendment to. He headed the committee because I got in an argument with somebody, and I take martial arts, I did back then, and I threatened to kick the guy in the face if he didn't shut up. And they asked me to step down as the head of the 14th Amendment committee, but I still had to teach the committee because nobody else knew this.
Well, I'm sure he deserved it.
Yeah, he was a real, I mean, he sat there for 2 hours where I'm trying to teach people, nonstop interrupting me. And then after all of it, he said he knew I was right. You know, I couldn't teach all these people that wanted to learn because it's one big
probably some go-and-go for a while.
It sounds to me like it was somebody who was there to actually make it so that you couldn't accomplish what you were striving to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I'm going to say something on the history at the time of the Civil War. And I don't mean to bash this particular family, and I'm not bashing them at all. I'm just stating what they stated just several years ago when they were questioned. They were Rothschilds. They were questioned, were you manipulating things in this country prior to, during, and after the Civil War?
And they said, oh, no, we have, like you said, we have many agents in your country, but we were not manipulating. Now, anybody who takes that as truth is a fool. You had that component. It wasn't just them. It was agents of the British government, French, and several other countries. Now, if you don't think they were playing the compromise game then, that's been around since pre-Roman times. Again, blackmail, extortion to commit or to provide an action or to administer something that would then manipulate how things turned out. And if we use the 14th Amendment as an example, I can guarantee you they were here. A lot of things then were handled through these secret societies. And they can your average, you know, 32nd degree, I wouldn't say so much with a lot of in the 33rd, in Freemasonry in this country, for example. Be honest about the history. Be honest about what you've done as modern intelligence and covert operations are based on a lot of that that goes back to the time of the Knights Templar. A lot of this, those who found them threatening, they destroyed them. And what did they do? Defamation. I don't believe that they were engaging in any of the nonsense they claimed they were. I think that they have become too powerful and too shrewd at the games that were being played against serfdom then, that they were a threat to both the royalty and the Vatican at that time. That carried on as Freemasonry, and I'm not bashing I'm not bashing any of this. I'm saying look at the reality of their histories and involvements. Why did you have Monkey? Oh, I always want to call him Monkey Boy Bush because he looks like a monkey to me, Bush Jr. And if he's not a junior, but you know who I mean. And what's that horse face guy, Kerry, who threw a quarter grenade into a pile of rice, got a piece of shrapnel under his skin that he could have pulled out in the field with his two fingers, but needed that purple heart. He had to get that milieu about him being someone involved in combat like Kennedy was. He was trying to emulate John F. Kennedy. And then this contacts and family helped him do so when he showed up in a OD green fatigue jacket and sat there and testified as a young man on all the stuff that was wrong with the Vietnam War. No, he was just trying to make political points and a name for himself to jump into that world. So understand, there's always this human element of manipulation and, let's say, very deep influence that has always been there. That's part of your hidden hand. That is one piece of the puzzle to how the 14th came about. Now, who they might have used to do that, those names would be, you'd find most of those being members of Congress at that time. So maybe some more study needs to be done specifically on who said what and when, who proposed what and when, and why they proposed it. And but I think that's a good way to look at that and a good direction to go in. But we have to get access to older records, older books, textbooks, you name it, all of it applies.
Let me jump in there for a second and say, you know, it's interesting when you look at who controls information. You know, I mean, what was Amazon initially? What was Amazon? It was just a bookstore. It was a used bookstore initially, right? Well, you know,
he sold the books out of his garage in Hialeah, Florida, which was my old stomping ground. I know the history very well.
But the point is that when you go to the used book and into the used book world, who controls that? I dare say that is basically that is the used book realm and world is an operation within the powers that be to make sure that certain books that come in that are used don't get recycled, but actually get destroyed, because that information is too dangerous to have out in the public sphere.
You're right. There are a few rare book dealers. You'll find them in New York, Sydney, Australia, a few in major cities across the world who actually, if you're lucky enough, they'll have it. If not, they'll go to the ends of the earth to find it within their network. And they will sell certain things through Amazon, but a lot of their collections you can find on their own websites. One comes to mind who pirated a piece of work I did without my permission and was selling it for $250 a copy. I think, Gordon, you remember that when I sent him cease and desist letters, and he just basically ignored me. But, you know, be that the case, you know, there's a lot of shysterism in that world like any other. But if you go to the right rare books dealer, not Amazon, and you can contact them over the internet, or if you want to make a trip to their locations, they'll find, if they can find it, if it still exists in hard form, even in private libraries, might cost you a pretty penny, but the information would be in those books. And I have a feeling most of the things that would be needed to show all of this part of it.
I'm going to give an example real quick. There was a book out there referred to as a racial program for the 20th century, or a racial program for the 20th century. It was, and this is from Wikipedia, I'm just reading it straight out, was the imaginary book title of a 1950s hoax purporting a foreign communist plot to increase racial tensions in the United States. The hoax gained a public notoriety when a congressman read a supposed quotation from the book to argue against the Civil Rights Act of 1957. So on June 7th of 57, Representative Thomas Abernathy of Mississippi read into the Congressional Record a supposed quotation from this quote-unquote non-existent book, which was purported to have been written by Israel Cohen in 1912. And it said, "We must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tensions. By propounding into the consciousness of the dark races for that centuries they have been oppressed by whites, we can mold them into a program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming the Negro minority as the whites, or against the whites, we will endeavor to instill in the whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the Negroes. We will aid the Negroes to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the professions, and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause." Now, from a Zionist standpoint, if you understand what Zionism is, this is right out of their playbook. And there's no way in hell anybody's going to make me believe that Abernathy read out of a make-believe book, especially at the height of what was going on with McCarthy in the early 1950s. This is 57, so it was on the heels of McCarthy.
This is where people need to understand that Wikipedia, why did this platform that has to run by donations, non-civil subsidized somewhere through private means, which lead to a source operating all this to get this information out there? Because people are too quick to run to Wikipedia as if it's mm-hmm. treasure trove of truth. It is not.
No, it's propaganda. Let me bring it home one real quick, because the whole point that I was trying to make is that I have tried to find on multiple occasions. I've scoured the internet, the dark web. I've looked everywhere to try to find a copy of this book. Racial program for the 20th century. Now, Israel Cohen has written several books, but I cannot find a copy of this at all. And so, and because you can't find it anywhere, it has essentially been deleted from the face of the earth. But there are, I've seen in comment sections where a few people say that they actually have a copy of it, but you know, I've never seen it. But this is what control of the used books gives people, it gives people the ability to go in and take things like this out of circulation and destroy them.
And censor true information flow.
Correct.
And,
I just dropped the link in the chat. And this has gone significantly down in price when I was first made aware of Eric John Phelps' book, Vatican Assassins. It was right around, hovering around a little over $1,000. It is now, I just dropped a link in the chat here. It is now on Amazon selling for, $695. Why so expensive? They don't want you reading this thing. And this is what Ron was talking about, you know, books that, and this was 25 years worth of Eric John Phelps' life from San Francisco, California, by the way, who had issues with the certain assassinations that happened back in the 60s. And he said, I need to find the truth and find out exactly where and why this is happening. And he did that. And I'm going to tell you right now, Gordon here knows about this because actually Gordon, myself, and Ghost did a video on Vatican Assassins. We did a review on it. It's intense, very, very intense. And when I got to the first 35 pages, I had to push it away. My brain could not fucking take it. I'm telling you right now. If you guys out there have not, I know that my fans that or followers out there from my channel know about this because we did a whole back and forth on this particular book. And you guys that are in here can just post comments in the chat if I'm off base here. But this will tell you a lot about where and why we are where we are today. And again, this is why I keep saying all the time, all roads lead back to the Vatican. Blew my mind. It's like drinking from a fire hose.
On that particular point, somewhere on my files, I have a PDF copy of that book.
There, I know that we've actually uploaded a PDF copy of this book where you guys can have access to it for no charge, unless you want to throw a buck to the chat. That'd be cool. I'm kidding, but it's available. It's out there. Who's in Digi, if you have access to that link or that PDF, if you can dig that up and throw it up here on the chat for anybody that wants to look up and read on it.
I think I actually have a copy of it as well. I'm looking for it right now on my computer. I have so much storage on my computer. I think I have like about 150 terabytes of stuff. But anytime I ever come across a documentary or videos I like, I always download them because I want to make sure that if anything ever happens to them, I can always go back and watch it. I don't see it, but anyway.
Hey, Ron.
Did you find yes, sir.
When y'all get done, would you mind reading the last five paragraphs of that?
Sure, not a problem. Absolutely.
I have a link to that Supreme Court case, and I also had the pages from that link highlighted. But was said to be ratified. It passed by one vote, supposedly. And if you start at by March 17th, 1867, in the last five paragraphs, you'll see that. You'll see the fraud behind this. And like I said, the Utah Supreme Court pointed this out. The last couple paragraphs was kind of pointed out in Coleman versus Miller, U.S. Supreme Court, 1939, but they didn't touch base like they did here. This is gold.
All right, here I'll start. So by March 17th, 1867, the proposed amendment had been ratified by 17 states and rejected by 10, with California voting to take no action thereon, which was the equivalent to rejection. Thus, the proposal was defeated. One of the ratifying states, Oregon, had ratified by a membership wherein two legislators were subsequently held not to be duly elected. And after the contest, the duly elected members of the legislature of Oregon rejected the proposed amendment. However, this rejection came after the amendment was declared passed. Now, pause there for a second. My understanding is that a state can, if they decide to rescind their approval one time, or ratification. They can rescind their ratification if they have the, if they want, if they so choose. Despite the fact that the southern states had been functioning peacefully for 2 years and had been counted to secure ratification of the 13th Amendment, Congress passed the Reconstruction Act, which provided for the military occupation of 10 of the 11 southern states. It included Tennessee from military, or it excluded Tennessee from military occupation. And one must suspect it was because Tennessee had ratified the 14th Amendment on July 7, 1866. The act further disenfranchised practically all white voters and provided that no senator or congressman from the occupied states could be seated in Congress until a new constitution was adopted by each state, which would be approved by Congress, and further approved that each of the 10 states must ratify the proposed 14th Amendment, and the 14th Amendment must become a part of the Constitution of the United States before the military occupancy would cease and the states be allowed to have two seats in Congress, or have seats in Congress. By the time the Reconstruction Act had been declared to be the law, three more states had ratified the proposed 14th Amendment, and two, Louisiana and Delaware, had rejected it. Then Maryland withdrew its prior ratification and rejected the proposed 14th Amendment. Ohio followed suit and withdrew its prior ratification, as also did New Jersey. California, which earlier had voted not to pass upon the proposal, now voted to reject the amendment. Thus, 16 of the 37 states had rejected the proposed amendment. By spurious non-representative governments, seven of the southern states, which had theretofore rejected the proposed amendment under the duress of the military occupation and of being denied representation in Congress, did attempt to ratify the proposed 14th Amendment. On July 20th of 1868, the Secretary of State issued its proclamation, wherein he stated that it was a duty under the law to cause amendments to be published and certified as part of the Constitution when he received official notice that they had been adopted pursuant to the Constitution. Thereafter, his certificate contained the following language, and this is Exhibit 9. Do you want me to read this whole thing, or?
Oh, no, no. That answers your question on how this thing got passed. It never did. Mm. It never did. And I got a link right there to the Utah Supreme Court. It's highlighted. And I'm going to get into the appendix of fake Executive Order 6. The document below this, and it's a credible link. I just checked it out. It's a CRS.
Let me finish. I'm going to finish here because I'm in the red. So the 14th Amendment was not proper. Is this a continuation, or is that it?
Let me see. I went past that. Yeah. Well, no, this is the next document.
Okay. The next document
is a CRS report. It was prepared for committees and members of Congress in 2000. It was updated every year until 2012, until that Harold C. Relea, whatever his name is, retired. Now, page 5, which is CRS-2, top paragraph, makes clear there's four executive orders that never had the signature of the president. And I got it highlighted in yellow right there. One is Executive Order 6 that ordered the 14th Amendment ratified, and Executive Order 7 that certified it, the ratification, and published. And because basically they were fake executive orders, they were booked and paged with the presidential directives instead of with the rest of the executive orders. And that link does work. It takes you right to an Arkansas library, a university. It's a .edu. I think it's the University of Little Rock, in Arkansas in Little Rock. But you can't find this no more on the government's website. They took it down. But a couple of universities still have it. So it would be a good one to print.
Ron, I don't know if I'm in the correct screen for what Bruce is reading from. We need to make some adjustments. Let's do that.
I'm at Exhibit 11. Should I go up or down?
Well, Exhibit 10 is the one I was on. That's the CRS report that told every member of Congress from 2000 to 2012 that a fake executive order signed by the secretary, not the president, ordered the 14th Amendment ratified. Remember, once again, that martial law jurisdiction still exists. That's the only reason they can do those. If they would have signed the Treaty of Peace, they couldn't be doing this mess.
Wow. I'm curious to find out, just based on this 14th Amendment stuff, and where we are right now in current times and what we foresee coming our way. And this may be a question for Ghost here. Can we be affected by the 14th based on where we are now and what we see coming as far as any, I don't know, protection towards we the people?
What do you mean by protections?
You know, to have a leg to stand on. Basically, the whole martial law thing is what's freaking throwing me into a tizzy.
These things have to be brought to the attention of a number of people in office. And they need to take the time to understand all of this.
But it was for 12 years and they did nothing. Ron Paul's the only one that said anything.
Yeah, that's true. It's right.
What did Bruce say?
That from 2000 to 2012, every member of Congress got a copy of the CRS report prepared for committees and members of Congress, and nobody but Ron Paul ever said anything. The U.S. State Department prepared this for Congress. Every member got a copy.
Well, Ron Paul was the
only one that said anything.
God, I love that man. The greatest president we never had.
Yeah. Now, right below it, Exhibit 11 is Presidential Proclamation 11, which is fake Executive Order 6. Now, the appendix of that, which is 12, because they're two different pages, they're one page apart in the Library of Congress. My eyes are kind of blurry, Ron. If you could read that
William,
again.
William Seward? Okay, so.
On appendix, on exhibit 12.
Okay. All right.
He even points out the things of fraud in his appendix.
It says here, and whereas neither the act, let me see if I can make this even a little bit bigger. I can't. And whereas somebody's got the video on playback in the background, and I hear myself talking.
Yeah.
I don't know who has that, but if you could please mute that. And whereas neither the act quoted from nor any other law expressly or by conclusive implication authorizes the Secretary of State to determine and decide doubtful question as to the authenticity of the organization of state legislatures or as to the power of any state legislature to recall a previous act or resolution of ratification of any amendment proposed to the Constitution. And then continuing on, reading only the highlighted part, I'm just going to read. And whereas it further appears from documents on file in this department that the amendment to the Constitution of the United States proposed as aforesaid has also been ratified by newly constituted and newly established bodies avowing themselves to be and acting as the legislatures respectively of the states of Arkansas, Florida, North Carolina, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Alabama. And where it further appears from official documents on file in this department that the legislature of two of the states first above enumerated, to wit Ohio and New Jersey, have since passed resolutions respectively withdrawing the consent of each of said states to the aforesaid amendment. And then you've highlighted California, which I think because you said they rejected it. Bruce? Okay. Not sure what happened there.
I was on mute. I'm sorry. The only reason I highlighted California is because that's my home state. And as the U.S. Supreme Court pointed out, California declined the 14th Amendment the second time. But there it is in the appendix as one of the states that supposedly voted for it.
Yeah, but they rejected it.
Yeah, and it only passed by one vote is what they tell us. And there's that one vote right there, bam, right out the water. Not even going any further.
So the 14th Amendment should not be law.
No. And as far as really addressing this issue, I think the stars are aligning so that eventually, the military will have to come out and be the arbiter of this. Any rapid, stark changes to all of this would have to be done through, and they have the jurisdiction because basically things should be run through Army Civil Affairs as the way the states stand now. And do we do that? No, we don't. Is there an influence from that arena? What it is now would be very hard to tell. But with things as they truly stand at this time in history, they should be able to, through civil affairs, simply through even like a Nuremberg type investigation before trials, go through all of this and see that, well, their employer is not doing their job as it should be. And this, in my opinion, the best and most direct way to deal with all of this would be through some type of military intervention. What events cause that, I don't know. But I have a feeling we might possibly see a confluence of events that would require them to step out from the shadows and say, you know, this is where we really stand in all of this. This is our authority, and this is what we're going to do. And I know there are generals out there who would disagree with what I'm saying, but if they understood this material and more, and keep their oath, they would find that it's their duty to do this, whether active or retired. I'll leave it at that.
Because we're I think we wanted to keep this at what was the time frame that we wanted to keep this at? Was it 2 or 3 hours?
3 hours.
Okay.
Here's the deal. We're coming up on two 2 hours now.
And we're not even halfway through the document.
Yeah. We may want to consider doing a part two to this. If at all possible, what are your thoughts on that?
Like stopping here, like pausing here, and then coming back and doing a part two where we pick up from exhibit 13.
Yeah, that's where the president even says that the 14th Amendment was never presented to him to sign or veto. That's a requirement.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to propose that we kind of like maybe do a little bit of Bruce, I'd like to have you kind of do a summation of where we are and then come back and then do a part two of this where we go back through some of this other stuff. I know that Gordon being in Australia would be a little bit of a challenge, but you know, I'm willing to work around schedules if you guys are. Hold on, they're muted.
Sorry. I'm sorry, I was muted. I had to push the button. I tell you something, I give you all a homework assignment for part two, the listening audience, that if you really want to wrap your mind around this, scroll down the exhibit 15. I just checked, the link works. Page 15641 through 15646, memorialized on the House floor, Judge Lander H. Perez, the Louisiana legislator, declared the 14th and 15th Amendment was never lawfully adopted. This thing's law-driven. It gets book and page to every House and Senate journal and so forth. And like I said, on the last page, 15646, basically the remedy is public awareness must be aroused to the point that they want this fixed. And, you know, nobody wants to open their mouth. Nobody hardly even knows this. I'd be happy if 1 out of 10,000 people knew this. But this...
To your point, Bruce... You know, people are more concerned. Well, number one, The dollar has been devalued to such a degree that people are operating on just an enormous amount of stress because they can't pay their fucking bills. Then you also have, they're so preoccupied with being, what's the word I'm looking for, marketed to and advertised to, that they have to have all these things in order to be like to keep up with the Joneses, per se. Nobody cares about these things because it's not relevant to their lifestyle. But if they truly understood why it was relevant, it's kind of like nobody cared about the war in Europe between Britain, Germany, France, and Russia until Pearl Harbor. And then once Pearl Harbor happened, then everybody cared. So we kind of need to have I don't mean it to be like the PNAC agreement, but dare I say that we kind of need a Pearl Harbor moment to bring us to the awareness that we need.
Yes, sir. I mean, think about it. I mean, there's people out there that just large groups, nonprofits and everything that protest and fight against the fruits of this poison tree. Give you an example. Gun control comes from two jurisdictions, Interstate Commerce Clause and the 14th Amendment. Now, in 2009, the state of Montana passed a resolution where they can make their own guns and their own bullets within their state. And it said the ATF wouldn't have jurisdiction. Well, the ATF come back and said, yes, we do, the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
You know,
that's also happened in Missouri, and there was a suppressor law in Texas that's kind of going through it right now, where that you know they want to have their own rules and regulations on suppressors in Texas. If you buy something in Texas and it doesn't leave the state, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, to give you another example, before the 14th Amendment, victimless crimes wasn't a crime. I mean, if you got pulled over and you had a marijuana roach in your ashtray, the state of California or Texas or New York wouldn't claim to be a victim. You know, the 14th Amendment created victimless crimes. Okay, we got 3.2 million people in prison. Half of them victimless crimes.
Very interesting.
14th Amendment. Income
that's
tax.
A very interesting. That's a very interesting thought that I hadn't considered.
Yeah, the income tax, that's based on Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. Pay your part of that national debt, sir. You're a citizen of the United States. You owe $400,000+ on the national debt. Comes out of your check every week. You know, so you got income tax. So you got people that are upset with income tax that need this information. Somebody who may, you know, these fair tax or whatever, you know, if we can wake them up with this, they can wake up their following. Gun control. I mean, you know, it comes from this jurisdiction. How many different gun groups are there out there that are pro-gun trying to fight? If they learn the jurisdiction that is trying to take away their guns was actually fraudulent, passed by a fake executive order, it was never lawfully adopted. I mean, they would have some serious ammo to fight back with. They don't know this. They're dying from ignorance. That is what's killing our rights and our law. They don't know this. It's like trying to fight a martial artist and you don't know martial arts. This is martial arts. This is how you can defeat this. And they don't know. I mean, they're playing with BB guns and they got a cannon here. You know, it's law and public awareness. I mean, if anyone has any ideas how to wake the people up, that's how you save the country. Every issue that the Tea Party people complained about, I used to teach their audience and have the documents enlarged, 2x3 and laminated. And I would point out everything that they complained about, except for something like Social Security or something, all come from this jurisdiction. And people were all upset. They'd have all these meetings and, you know, mad about income tax, national debt, da-da-da, gun control was one of the big things at these Tea Parties. It's all coming from this. Without this, that wouldn't exist. There would be no jurisdiction for that if it wasn't for this. This is the giant, and it's a fraud. And the law is in our favor. The law is in our court, and nobody knows it. And, you know, the biggest problem is they're kicking out more indoctrinated people from the universities and grammar and middle schools and college and high schools faster than I can wake the people up with the truth. So somehow, you know, people need to – we got modern media out there, social media. You know, somebody can look cute and get 1 million likes. I mean, can't we get this out there somehow, people? You know, friends, family. It's not conspiracy. It's not theory. It's law-driven fact. I've got a couple links to fix, and I'll get them fixed. I mean, you know, I'll give you 10 grand if you can prove the 14th Amendment was lawfully adopted. I got that in my truck. I mean, you can't. Neither can a professor that taught you. Neither can the school teacher that taught you. This is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's, you know, are you familiar with the Reese Committee?
No, sir, I'm not.
Okay. So the Reese Committee was put out there by Congressman Reese in the, I want to say it was the late 1950s, early 1960s. And the, anyway, it was, they were, what they wanted to do was the Congress wanted to find out and get to the bottom of all of these like foundations, what they were doing and why all of a sudden these foundations and all this foundational money was coming in and having so much influence on the government, basically NGOs. And the guy who was put in charge to investigate this, Norman Dodd, you know, he headed up the committee and they went out and they started interviewing all these people. And basically the foundations were extraordinarily open about their desire. They literally said that it's our aim to merge the Soviet Union with the United States. That was what they were trying to do. They wanted to bring together the best aspects of communism with the best aspects of capitalism into one state. And that was the entire aim of what basically everything that has happened stemming from the call it the progressive era of government, you know, starting in the early 1900s or late 1800s, you know, up until like up through Woodrow Wilson and then FDR,
which is basically China's model right now if we really think
exactly
about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anything to make domination by the bankster level, that's, they're going to do it, and they're going to push it through things such as communism, or the idea, or the underpinnings of what communism really is. There's many different words for it, to be truthful, but it all boils down to an easier system of command and control over the individual. And all of it's backed by the threat of violence through fictions of authority, a lot of which came to be because of this 14th Amendment nonsense, this jurisdiction.
And dare I say, to add upon that, Ghost, is that it's not just the threat of violence. It's the threat of violence that has been monopolized, because they have monopolized the threat of violence. And, you know, it's baffling to me sometimes when you listen to like the I remember when was it the World Trade Organization, when they had the World Trade Organization riots in Seattle in the 90s, and all these people were up there, you know, clamoring like, we don't want this. And I remember thinking that they were a bunch of lefty tree huggers, and I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I think you're crazy. And then it turns out that they were freaking right. But a lot of time, you know, the vast majority of people on the left, you know, like say Occupy Wall Street. Well, the Occupy Wall Street people, they had it right in the sense that, you know, they want to rein in all this corporate corruption. But what they fail to understand is they literally want to give the government a monopoly on the power, because they don't trust the corporations. Yet the corporations and the government are working hand in hand, and they don't see that. I don't understand that disconnect.
And you also have to understand the secret police of Wall Street. Who are they? And have been from the beginning. Let that one sink in.
It's all, like we've discussed many times before, it's been a slow progression of an agenda. Just because the agenda doesn't congeal in one's lifetime doesn't mean that the primary and prime components have been put into place, beginning with this onward. Federal Reserve Act, another high point in that. And then a number of laws and acts that were passed from 1921 on. They gave it a little time to fester during the World War I. And again, the real enemy to humanity is that sovereign banking layer. And It's quite extensive.
People want to, you know, and people want to narrow that down to just, you know, one group of people. And while I certainly think that there can be some merit to that, in the sense that the vast majority of those who are advocating this system are members of that one group, I disagree with the notion that it's everybody of that group is responsible for this. Somebody's on. If you guys are talking, you're on mute.
I'm here. I'm good. Let's see. Gordon, you copy? You there?
Yes, I'm on. I can hear you. What I can say is though that all this stuff comes back to contract law. They're only offering you a contract.
I'm gonna drop out and come back in.
Because that's how they operate. And it's through stealth and lies that they get you.
Okay.
Well, let's do this. Bruce, why don't you kind of give us just like a quick summation of kind of where we are, and then are you guys okay with coming back and doing a part two? You're cutting this to 2 hours and coming back and doing a part two. Are you guys good with that? Because I think 4 hours would be better than three.
I'm okay anytime.
All right, Gordon's in.
Yeah. No.
Can you hear me?
We can
hear you. I think.
No, they just cut. They just dropped.
They just dropped.
They just dropped off. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay. Well, let's just here. I'm gonna. Oh, they're back. But hello, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, the audio is there's no audio. The audio is not connecting. So, I'm just going to go ahead and Armando, I'll just go ahead and just say, you know, hey, we'll bring it back and try to resolve some of the technical difficulties that we're experiencing, and then you know, and then do part two. And I've marked this website where we are. I think at exhibit 13, if I'm not mistaken. And let's come back and do this another time. Let's coordinate this over the phone.
Sounds good. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that, because I don't know what in the world is going on, but this definitely needs to be addressed. My apologies to everybody out there right now in the stream. This is not how things usually run. Our tech is usually 100% spot on. You guys know this because we haven't had these issues before, but lately we are running into these difficulties. I don't have an answer to it, but we will definitely dig into this and get it figured out, and we'll definitely come back with a part two to continue this. There's just too much to cover, to go over. It's like drinking from a fire hose. Hopefully you guys will understand. So apologies again in advance, but we will make this right for you. Just my people out there, please just stay tuned. I'll drop the future release to part two in Discord. In my Discord, and we'll go ahead and make it happen.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks everybody for your time. Again, I want to echo that apology for the technical difficulties, and we're going to do what we can to get those ironed out. You know, for the next time. So, anyway, thank you everybody for your time tonight. Hope you got something out of this, and we will see you again in the immediate future. So, everybody, enjoy your evening.
Good night. Take care, guys.